CliffCentral.com.
That's the lead.
When you hear that jungle music, come on, you know it's no borders. Every Friday, 1 to 2 p.m., your, what does Kamu say? Your, what does he say? Says your afternoon lunch, something. So he's got a little tag phrase that he does with it. Unfortunately, Kamu's not around today. He's involved in some extracurricular activities that I can't mention. As usual, you can't say anything about what Kamu's doing. You know what I mean? It could be criminal. Plus, you know, with everything that's going on in Pretoria, Herman Mashaba, thank you very much for promoting xenophobia in the country. It's hard. We don't get around anymore. Like, I left the house. I walked here because I can't get on no public transport. The minute you don't sound like you're from South Africa, you're in trouble. It's crazy what's going on. It's unfortunate. No Borders is a show that's dedicated to building, you know, actually not dedicated to building, but to breaking down the barriers, the artificial barriers that are, you know, that were implemented by the West, you know, in Africa. It was 1873, actually. Like, so I'm going to take you through a little history lesson, Palliser. Show you I'm educated like that. I'm giving myself away. You know, it's a typical Zimbabwean thing to do, right? So in 1873, a big part of Europe sat down in Germany and decided, well, there's this place called Africa. I think they probably named it Africa. I think we need to change the name of our own continent because they probably named it Africa, right? And they sat down and they demarcated and shared the pie. Like, okay, we're going to take this part. We're going to take those people. Imagine, like, they actually shared us. So all the borders, and that's why we came up with the concept of no borders, for those of you who are a bit confused, is to build dialogue and conversations amongst Africans. Most of the issues that we experience on the continent are shared, but we don't share in trying to solve those issues. I mean, which is, so consider no borders like the EU of Africa, because the AU ain't doing nothing. But anyway, it's sad what's going on. I saw a video clip of a Nigerian individual being whipped and kicked in Pretoria. And I mean, I think it's, in as much as, you know, I agree with friends when they speak about how there are a lot of undocumented foreigners within the country, illegal people who are here illegally, and a lot of them are involved in illegal, you know, activities. But I don't think it's for justice to be, you know, to be handed down by individuals. You know what I mean? It should be a state-run thing. It shouldn't, you know, the people who are in charge of those issues should be taking care of it. And Herman Mashaba, the way he said it, especially saying it to the public, was inappropriate for a leader and, you know, for a politician. And it's funny because the whole of social media, right? Every African right now is talking about, oh, my God, Trump is deporting people. Trump is deporting people. You know, so you're like, no, Trump, don't deport people. But in South Africa, like, no, yeah, let's deport them. Like, I mean, it's crazy. It's actually very ironic. But yeah, I'm also one of those. Fortunately, I'm legal. Hashtag. But I mean, I'm also a foreigner here, and it affects me. Even though I've got some very open-minded friends, I've got a lot of South African friends, and it becomes very weird because the conversations come up, and they're talking about a Zimbabwean who did this to them, and then I'm just kind of sitting there like, okay. But anyway, I denounced my Zimbabwean citizenship. I'm now from Morocco. I think I'm one of the only Moroccans in South Africa. So we've got a very special guest on the show. As usual, we always have special guests. If you're on the show, you're definitely special. Nompumelelo, do you want to rock the headphones? Mm-hmm. You're looking lovely. I love the African print.
Thank you.
That's not South African, though. Where'd you get it?
Well, I'm African.
Hey, you see, thank you. Nice comeback, homie. Nice comeback, because I was going to take you there. Nice comeback. How you doing?
I'm good, thanks.
Thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
I was kind of worried, because Kamu didn't make it, and then my guests weren't around. I'm like, this is going to be tricky. I can only do a monologue for so long. I love talking. Talking is like, I get paid to talk, actually, but I can't do it by myself. Like, I'm not a monologue person. I couldn't have been in, what's that movie? I Am Legend, Will Smith, where it's just by himself talking to the dog. Or Mars, Martian, Matt Damon. Like, I don't know how he did that. Like, a whole movie, and you're just talking to yourself? That's crazy. Anyway, Nompumelelo, you are, correct me if I'm wrong, you got a big title. How do you even introduce yourself?
Oh, good Lord. It's not really big. It's not. I'm just a program coordinator. I'm from the Gordon Institute of Business Science.
There we go. You see?
Yeah.
Gordon Institute, she's a program coordinator for the Center of Leadership
and Dialogue
at the Gordon Institute of Business Studies. That's a very long title. I think it's long. You just need to, like, cut it down. Like, Nompumelelo. Yeah, I did my postgrad at Gibbs, the BMI course.
Oh, okay, nice.
The Bloomberg course. And I'm one of the facilitators at SOI.
And so I saw.
And it's tomorrow.
You're part of the family.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to make it tonight. It's a hectic schedule. But yeah, I mean, it's a beautiful initiative. But that's what we're here to talk about.
Yes.
So we're here to talk about a program at the Gordon Institute of Business Science, which we're just going to call Gibbs from now on. And Nompumelelo is here to tell us, you're one of the founding you started it off, like sort of like you were there in the inception of SOAR?
I wasn't at the inception, but I've worked on the program for a number of years now. So I have a bit of a background in terms of what the program is about and how it started. It was actually started by Professor Nick Benedil, the founding dean of Gibbs.
Oh, wow. Okay.
As well as the former Reserve Bank...
The head of your reserve bank. Governor.
Yeah, governor, okay. Miss Jill Marcus. And so they had this whole thing of we can't as a business thrive while the community around us isn't really,
corporate social responsibility. Exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so the Center for Leadership and Dialogue is really centered around that. It's centered on actually creating a holistic view in terms of how business engages with civil society,
exactly,
with business and government. And so the center really does work to bring all of that together.
I just got goosebumps. I love that. Yeah, because I was actually surprised that Gibbs does anything of that nature. Because Gibbs is, first of all, it's the best business school in Africa currently, right?
Of course, yeah. We rock.
I had to throw that in there. And it is very, I'm sorry to say, but it does come across, like, I don't even say it that much anymore, because it does come across as elitist. Like, I mean, the University of Pretoria, then you guys are based in Sandton, you know what I mean? Like. But I mean, I'm just saying, until you actually get there, you don't realize that there's actually a whole lot that you guys are doing for the community.
Yeah.
What was the actual, the founding premise of SOAR?
Of SOAR.
Yeah. And what is SOAR?
Yeah. So maybe to take you a little bit back, it's actually not a CSI initiative as per se. Mm-hmm. When we speak about the Center for Leadership and Dialogue, it's the third pillar of the school. You know that we are an academic institution, our flagship program is the MBA, but there's other pillars of the school, and the Center for Leadership and Dialogue really. It's about bringing that different stakeholders, and you spoke about dialogue earlier.
Yes.
We need to engage. We need to break down the borders and create platforms where people can engage. And so when Spirit of Youth was formulated, it was really to do that, specifically that, with the younger generation.
Exactly.
Imagine, I think some of what you alluded to earlier, if people are fighting about a certain thing right now, if we were younger and had an opportunity to actually be in a perhaps safe space to discuss differences, I think that could actually make the space a much richer space.
Exactly.
And so the Spirit of Youth program, really, we bring a number of diverse young people from different spectrums of South Africa, socioeconomic, geographically, ethnicity, you name it, they're all there. We even had a Jewish school last year, which was rare because you know that the Saturday is actually like a Sabbath. And so,
yes, exactly. So it would be very hard for them to attend.
Yeah, but that was, and that's what we want. We want a melting pot of diversity because really when we engage with diversity, we actually see how similar we are, and we start appreciating the nuances of every differences which we think we have. It's not really much difference, but a lot of similarity. So it's for the young people to actually just be given a platform to voice and articulate their vision of what South Africa should be and tackle some of those critical issues that are taking place in South Africa and affecting them. And so they get to engage as peers, but they also get to, in some level, engage with policymakers. And so that's why the Spirit of Youth program.
I mean, I love it because, and it's so in line. I mean, I remember talking to William and...
JD.
And I think one of the biggest issues was, especially with No Borders, is what we're trying to say is that, yes, we do have our individual differences, like anyone else. Yeah. But as opposed to the West, I mean, I had one of my professors back in college who said, the West believes in tolerance.
Mm.
Tolerance means I really can't stand you, but I'm going to pretend to stand you because that's what we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Then in Africa, we have something totally different, which is solidarity.
Mm.
Our differences are what actually bring us together.
Yeah.
Meaning that, and we always give the simple example. You guys farm maize, right? And we're cattle herders. So let's exchange. Y'all need meat. We know we'll give you the meat, and in exchange, you give us the grain.
Yeah.
And that's how Africans, need to relate to each other. Our differences and the shared, sharing those differences, saying, okay, I've got something to offer you. You've got something to offer to me. Let's put it all together. How many years has SOAR been running?
So 12 years. It was like 2005 it started. And this is our 12th year, if my maths is correct. So, yeah.
Yeah, that is awesome.
Yeah.
And I noticed that MTN is one of your sponsors this year.
Yeah, it is.
So the other corporate individuals have also bought into the whole idea.
Well, in the past couple of years, which is a big thing, and I think... and maybe this is my moment to sell this and actually get other companies to sponsor us and perhaps say thank you to MTN because they've actually held it down for 3 years and actually sponsored everything. And if you know, most of the delegates who actually come on the program, some of them don't really, would never have had this experience, you know, to be in an institution of higher learning and actually get a spectrum into another sphere of life. And so it really opens a big opportunity for young people in that respect. And so thank you for people like MTN who've actually sponsored the program for the last past 3 years. We've had also on board Old Mutual and the Gauteng Development Trust in the last couple of years, past few years, as well as DIREFCO in Durban, because we also had Spirit of Youth in Durban and in Cape and in Cape Town, but we had to actually shut it down because of no funding.
Exactly.
So it's fully funded. And so maybe this is also a drive to say, if other big corporates out there can sponsor this program, it's not just sponsoring, it's not a CSI thing, but if you think about this, it's to do with building South Africa, building active citizenry, and actually getting young people to engage in issues much earlier on, you know, and you were speaking to what's actually happening in our country right now, which is very, very sad. And I think through this platform, the young people actually get to see the other, and it's really about dialogue. It's not about me being right and you being wrong.
Exactly.
It's about different perspectives and how I can appreciate and see your side in a different lens.
In a different lens,
In a different lens. And
I understand you're doing it for that purpose.
Know. And so it's for me, I think, and I'm proud to be associated with Gibbs, with an institution that's so forward-thinking and progressive in terms of saying, how can we actually invest in young people to actually have these... We live in a very diverse melting pot here in South Africa anyway. And so it's sort of like a cosm of what's actually happening in South Africa when we bring these young people together.
How have you seen it so far? Like, I mean, especially the time that you were then directly involved. How have you seen the different cultures and, you know, socioeconomic groups coming together?
Yeah.
I'm actually kind of, I'm a bit afraid. I'm a bit afraid. I'm like, okay, how am I going to deal with this? And sometimes, you know, naturally, especially... You know, with my background, both in political science and from radio, I adapt to who I'm speaking to.
Yes.
So, you know, if I'm at the JSC, I'm going to speak in a certain way. And if I'm in Eshowe, you know, I'll be bobbing my head and saying, Kandla.
I win. So you're a chameleon. You just flow with it, eh?
No, but I mean, you have to speak to people. And so, and I don't mean in terms of content.
Yeah.
But I mean the way that I speak. And then you're kind of wondering, okay, but this is one big group. How do you speak to all of them in a way... I'm trying to find out from you, how have you seen it over the years, you know, bringing so many different and not in terms of principle or theory.
Yeah.
Because in theory on paper it looks beautiful, like, oh my God, you guys are doing a great thing. But when you actually experience it and see it in real life, how does it come across?
First of all, I'm so excited for you that you're going to be part of this life-changing process. And so maybe you'll even speak more about it after you've actually delved into it and actually worked with
people. I actually want some of the students on the show at one point in time.
I'm so happy we have this platform so you can even, you know, see the impact yourself. But I think what's beautiful is we create a platform where we say to the young people, it's not about where you're from, but here it's about leadership and personal mastery. And so we cut away a lot of the frills and say, it's about you being a leader, whether you are from Soweto or whether you are from Orange Farm, that's not the point. The point is you have a voice within you and there's something about you that we just want to get out. And it's not an approach where we're pouring in. We actually feel that the young people actually have a lot to say. They have a lot of ideas. They are beaming with light. They are beaming with so many solutions. They want to engage. They're interested in South Africa. I mean, we did a survey, as you would know, as part of the Spirit of Youth program, we also run a career expo. I mean, there's so many expos in Johannesburg, but I think what stands out with our one, we also invite speakers to come and actually engage people who are actually in a certain profession to actually give an account. How has it been a DJ? How has it been an actuary? Whatever it is.
Yeah.
How has it been a marine biologist and so on? And so the young people, and we do a survey and we use that space because it's about 2,300 young people in one space.
Wow.
It's a good space to actually tap into what's happening into the minds of youth.
Exactly.
And so a lot of what we saw, what young people said was, we're interested in this country, we're interested in the politics because we know that it's actually going to affect our future here. So they're invested in that. And typically people would say, these are the lost generation. They don't care about
the millennials.
You know what I mean?
The millennials,
and so it was fascinating for me to hear young people saying, look, I'm invested in actually making South Africa the place to be. We've got a beautiful country, no doubt, with and without its challenges. And so how can I, as a young people, in the sphere of influence that I'm in, actually address these challenges? And so I think when we minus all of that of background and where you come from and say you are a leader, immediately the kids rise up to say, actually...
Well, it's in within them.
Yeah, you know.
And one of the major issues I've had, I mean, I come from a family where we were always encouraged to voice our thoughts.
Yes.
And I have noticed that not just in South Africa, but Africa as a continent, children aren't really, you know, there's that cultural, traditional, you know, thing that don't talk too much. Now, I've actually got friends who are like, you talk too much, but that's the way I was. Like, at home, they're like, hey, say what you want to say. So that when you're wrong, or if you have certain things that are maybe misguided, people then can tap into your thoughts.
Yes.
And unfortunately, we grow up with that. And I actually heard when we were doing our orientation
that
there are a lot of students who will be quiet for a very long time because they're not used to speaking.
Absolutely.
And it's very important to start getting these people to, you know, to voice their thoughts, because all the solutions that we're looking for in Africa are within them. And even the problems that are within Africa are within them. So if we don't find out what the problems are, how do we find out what the solutions are?
Absolutely.
And it is unfortunate that we do not speak as Africans. You know, we don't complain. That's another thing. You know?
Yeah.
And it starts at home, but then it's also programs like this that, you know, assist these people, give them the confidence. I think that's the word I was looking for. Give them the confidence. Say, no, I mean, I can actually speak.
Yeah.
And then after two or three sessions, they're like, no, but people actually listen to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm being commended for what I'm saying. I didn't even have an idea what I was. And it's not, like you said, it's not about right or wrong.
Yes.
It's about what is your opinion? What do you have to add to the table as opposed to not adding anything?
And I think because also you have that diversity. So you'd have a kid who's from maybe St. David's or... Mm-hmm. Kingsmead, high end to, you know, and so the kids like look at each other, and of course the first day is usually like, stay in your place, look good, da 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 da.
Yeah.
And like you're saying, it just looks good on paper. Mm-hmm. Like we've got this melting pot of kids, a myriad of different scenarios here, but then they leverage off each other. So, you know, the kids will speak more, learn through this dialogue process. Maybe I need to say less and give other people a chance.
Yes, that's me.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So it becomes an exchange. And and the ones who are a bit silent and sitting in their corner, like, wait a minute, maybe I do. I actually have something to
say, yeah.
You know, and maybe they emulate, okay, this one is saying something, you know, and it just...
No, perfect. I mean, you're very right. And not just for the students, for the facilitators.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, on our second day, I was quiet the whole day because I realized I talk. You know? And when you talk so much, you tend to then impose your views.
Absolutely.
On other people. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, maybe, you know, let me take a step back and listen. And that's what I'm really looking forward to actually listening to a lot of these kids and finding out. Because, I mean, we do tend to just force things upon younger generations. And what I want to do is actually listen to them and find out, hey, are they really millennials? Are they as lost as everyone, you know, thinks they are?
Yes.
There are other things. Like, I've had issues with friends where, I mean, it's a very common issue. I mean, people just don't say it. Mm. But I'm going to say, like, you know, the issue of accents.
Yeah, bro.
You know, like, no, why do you speak like that? Like, you know, in South Africa, there's actually a name for it. You speak like a Model C.
Yeah,
you know? And then, you know, and you will find, I mean, I was talking about, and I love Julius Malema when he speaks.
Mm.
There's that authenticity to his voice, you know, like you are drawn to listening, you know, and you can tell, you know, the grammatical errors here and there, but it doesn't matter because the message is being conveyed. And he recently said, we played a clip of when he spoke about ZANU-PF and Bob in Zimbabwe, and no one has been more articulate about the situation in Zim than he has. Say, you know what, Uncle Bob, your legacy in terms of land redistribution is one that we totally support as Africans.
Yes.
But the way you have done it now, and you being there continuously and not passing it down, is destroying that legacy.
Mm.
And you're the only example. So being the only example, if you mess it up, people are going to be like, no, we're not going to do land distribution because look at what happened there.
Yeah.
But going back to our issue, like, I get lost sometimes. Going back to the issue of accents, and I never believe in the way a person speaks as opposed to what they have to say.
Mm.
And, you know, when I noticed, I mean, you know, we went to St. John's College, then we went to a school in Alex. And so for me, people got very emotional. I didn't. Why? Because people were looking at, what do you call them? Material. Differentiations. Like,
yes,
you know,
yes.
Say, okay, these guys have all this. They have plush gardens and stuff. But I'm like, I don't really care about that. What is being produced?
in this.
You know what I mean? So you could be in a little hut somewhere in the village, you know what I mean? But what is coming out of that hut? Because it's about content at the end of the day. It's about what you do and not how you look or how you sound. And I think that's very important. I'm really looking forward to seeing the confidence levels, because I think this whole accent thing is a terrible, it just shows that there's a lot of unlearning that still needs to be done.
Absolutely.
You know, there's
absolutely
so much unlearning in Africa. Like, oh, why do you speak like that?
I know my colleagues back at Gibbs, JD, Itumeleng, shout outs to you guys. Always like, oh, Mpumi, you seem to like, some days you sound, you know, and I realize also we put it on sometimes because, you know, because it's South Africa is a very complex space and, you know, you navigate different environments and sometimes you tend to do this whole, you know.
Yeah. It's natural.
It can be a survival kind of mechanism.
Yeah.
Like you were saying earlier, I can't take a taxi today
God forbid.
And so maybe if you did, you would be like, hey, I'm going to try sound Zulu today stuff. So I can get where it's coming from sometimes, but it's...
And I don't mean that people should, you know, be fake.
Yeah.
If you speak the way you speak, then it's all good. Speak the way you speak. But I don't think people should be judged based on the way they speak. Just because you have, you know, a British twang or a French twang, or because you can say filet mignon, right?
Filet mignon.
You know, like, I would have been there until I heard it on TV. I would have been like, can I get the filet mignon? But I mean, that's...
What is that?
You know what I mean? But take someone from France, bring them here, and ask them to pronounce Chisanyama.
Exactly.
You know, we'll be giving them props for mispronouncing it, but then I'm looked down upon for mispronouncing. I'm not French. Right? So I don't think basically what I'm saying is, like, let's not judge each other based on the way we speak, but the content that we produce.
Yeah.
And at times, sometimes we even don't listen to people who have that twang because our assumption is they're trying to be fake. But that's just who they are. So and those are the things I'm really looking forward to, those.
The smaller
social variances amongst children, because it's very important, especially in Africa. I've seen it so much, especially in South Africa.
Yeah.
You know, your accent is like, okay, oh, that's how you speak. Did you go to a model C school? it's crazy. I mean, it's a beautiful initiative. Where do you guys see it going?
Sure. There's no end to this.
The vision, like, you know.
The vision really is to keep doing this. It's so, so pivotal to the growth of South Africa and to active citizenry, to building this country. Young people, we need more investment into young people. They are going to be the future leaders of this country. And so if we don't get it right at the bottom and, you know, much earlier, then we're going to be sitting with what's kind of like going on right now. So we need to really, really invest in young people and develop them and make them critically think, creatively, critically out of the box.
Is there any advocacy that you guys are involved in terms of having the government work a little more in terms of bridging the gap in terms of these variances?
I suppose,
because I will say there were like major differences between the schools, and I understand that's a private school, they pay way more school fees, but there are certain basics that you still do want to see, you know, in certain areas. And I think advocacy is very important. But why are you guys trying to stay politically correct? I'm putting you on the spot.
You're putting me on the spot here. I'm like,
they didn't warn you?
I'm like, how do I come back from this? But look, I think we know that there are issues within South Africa. And look, government needs to do a whole lot more when it comes to actually doing that. And I think in some respects, through some of the work that we do at the Center for Leadership and Dialogue and the Enterprise Development. So we've got a beautiful program called the SEP program, where we develop social entrepreneurs. And some of them are actually venturing into the space, filling up the gaps where government is actually failing to do so. And I think the other thing that we need to be aware of, we can't just say government only.
Yes.
What are we doing as citizens where we are?
Don't ask what your government can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
And so through some of those programs as well, besides the youth, we're saying to entrepreneurs and people with other creative ideas, what can we do as a country, as civil society, as just ordinary citizens? What can we really, how can we take this democracy and make it work for us? And where can we fill the gaps? And so it's always beautiful to see. I mean, you know, in a couple of weeks, it's going to be the Global Entrepreneurship Week.
Okay.
Entrepreneurship Week. Oh, good Lord. Mumbling over
my
words
there. I do it all the time.
And it's just about that conversation. What can ordinary people, and people have brilliant, innovative ideas to actually fill in these gaps in education. We know education is a big problem in South Africa.
And speaking of education, How was the budget split this year? I didn't listen to the budget speech. I was busy dodging xenophobia.
Don't ask me. Oh, good heavens.
But usually, I mean, South Africa is very weird in a good way because usually the highest amount is given to education.
Oh, yeah?
I heard that somewhere. Is that true, Palisa? Do you want to Google it?
Oh, please do, buddy. I don't want to misquote anything here. I actually didn't.
Because
I missed the speech.
I think if I'm not mistaken, South African budgets have, over the past couple of years, a large amount of the national budget has been going to education, mm-hmm. which is very rare because with most countries it goes to defense.
Oh.
Yeah, well, especially the U.S. They need to defend themselves, especially now.
Chai.
Jane, Donald Trump.
Chai.
I had to say, Jane, so we have one of our colleagues here at Cliff Central, Jane, my first wife, and she kept saying Donald Crump instead of Donald Trump. So we've just changed his name. I hope he can crump. Okay, fine, so we're looking... Is there a breakdown? Okay, so we'll do it after the segment, and then we'll just see. But I mean, it would be important. It's amazing that, you know, you guys are doing this. Thank you so much for having me on the program. I'm going to be amazing.
We hope.
But you know what? And one thing that you guys did emphasize is that it's not about you.
Yeah.
And as a radio host, a lot tends to be about us. So I'm trying to get into a space where it's not about me and a lot of engagement and listening. Because we just speak to people, you know. I never even give out the WhatsApp number because I'm like, no, I really don't want to hear what you have to say right now. Y'all just need to listen. Y'all can talk amongst each other about what y'all have to say. But Nompumlelo, do you want to give out any contact details if people, you know, want to get in touch, especially the sponsors? Hello. Or other sponsors, if you guys want to, you know, get in touch with the Spirit of Youth program at the Center of Leadership and Dialogue at Gibbs.
Yes, absolutely. They can go to our website, which is www.gibbs.co.za, and look out for the Spirit of Youth program. And yeah, sponsorship would be much appreciated because we need to invest in the youth.
Very true.
And so, yeah, that would be absolutely great. And of course, if you guys want to come out and actually be a facilitator as well, it's closed for this year, of course, but that's the other thing. So we do actually run a parallel program. As you said earlier, it's for the young people as well as the young professionals like yourselves who are volunteering to actually do this process. So you'll see, you actually also go through the same process similar to what the young people are going through as you are facilitating the program.
Now you're scaring me. Okay, thank you.
And so we're actually building two pillars at the same time, young people, young professionals. And again, it's about that transition. We're creating also the space for young people to actually get to see the transition between high school and professional life.
Yes, yes.
And it's almost like it's mini
important.
Mentorship.
I had it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like a mini mirror.
Absolutely. And you know, it's interesting to see that. Although I'm sure you've been actually given the whole spectrum of the lines that have to be clear in terms of how you engage with the young people.
Yes.
But when you have them there, there's so much that they can draw from you, and so there's so much that you can draw from them.
Yeah.
And so the mentorship can continue outside if they wish.
If they
and
wish,
at least they've got that thing to say, I know so-and-so, and if I need this, he's a professional, I can perhaps maybe carry this forth and
ask him. And that's very, very important because there is a lack of role models on the continent right now.
Is.
You know, like,
and
just
so,
someone to say, I look up to that person and I can actually go to them for advice.
Access them. So,
you know? Yeah.
Yeah, so it's, in that sense, it's beautiful to get young professionals also giving off their time. It's really in the spirit of how do we build South Africa? Mm-hmm. How do we give more of ourselves? And I applaud you for giving your time because it's...
Thank you very much.
It's a volunteer situation. It's not that you're going to get paid here.
Yeah, no, we know. I wish you would at least reimburse the taxis and just keep us safe. Maybe some security would be good as well, considering the circumstances now. No, thank you so much, Nompumlelo. And that was Nompumlelo from Gibbs, representing the Spirit of Youth program, which I am going to be a part of. Hoorah!
Hoorah!
A friend of mine has... So when I was on holiday for my birthday in Mpumalanga, I went with a good friend of mine called Timula. Amazing artist. And Timula played his latest track for me, which he just continues to like postpone in terms of releasing it. So I sent him a message 5 minutes ago. I'm like, well, you made the mistake of giving me the song, so I'm going to leak it on radio today. Shout out to Timula. The song is called Sexy Lady by Timula, featuring a dude called Emmy Jeezy. Not M-E-G, Emmy Jeezy. Now you can hit us up on WhatsApp and tell us, you know, whether you think it's a banger. I know it's a banger. Timula, sorry, bro. I warned you. Palisa, let's go. Shukula, shukula, No matter where you are from Africa, you definitely can relate to that music. The Americans did well. Eddie Murphy, shout out to you, man. Coming down to Africa, you know, well, it's actually what, coming to America. And they didn't even shoot any scenes in Africa, you know what I mean? And they had elephants walking in people's yards like, hey, this is what it's probably like in Africa. The show is No Borders, your boy KF. We had a special guest from Gibbs from the Spirit of Youth program. Some awesome stuff, very educational stuff, very motivating, very inspirational. I think, you know, one thing I hate is how every day, I mean, I grew up and people say, you're the future. You're 45 and people are still saying you're the future. I'm like, okay, when do I become the present? You know what I mean? Like, it's crazy. I've actually got the future of Cliff Central on the show right now. Palace, what's going on with my mic? It keeps dropping.
What are you doing with the mic?
Greg,
you busy just bumbing the mic.
I shouldn't when I ish,
yeah,
because things happen. I cannot afford to fix these things. Do you have insurance? These things
for
are
me.
Insured, ne?
For me, not, yeah,
not for us. Oh, okay. What do you mean? Wait, when you said us, what do you mean? Like us as us, you and I?
No.
Well, no. She did not.
Hey, so you guys, I remember during the holidays, you guys had a show.
Yeah, the Woke Show in the building.
You're made for radio, for real though.
Thank you.
You've got that arrogance, that cockiness.
Oh, I don't like that. Take that back.
No, in a good way. You know, you're like, you know, y'all better listen to
good.
Me.
Okay.
Two woke girls. I think you guys should continue with the show.
Please tell Rena that. Tell Gareth that. Thank you very much.
It was, I mean, I don't mean like, it's one of the shows that I actually used to enjoy. Like, I used to listen to it everywhere. Especially the taxi conversation with Felicity.
Oh.
That was very intriguing.
Did you enjoy the conversation or did you just enjoy the fact that Felicity was on the show?
Hey, yo, can we not get into it? Huh? I enjoyed the conversation. The conversation was dope. Really, though? You're going to put me on the spot on radio? Come on now, fam.
Yes.
I knew this was a mistake. But you see, for the first time, and people know I love Malawi, but I got to call Malawi out every now and then.
Mm-mm.
We were supposed to have a Malawian on the show.
Oh, okay.
Tay Grin, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, okay, finally, let's get them to speak on behalf of themselves, you know, give us. But hey, when it's quarter to two, the show ends at 2 o'clock. People are about to go back to work.
You know, when you were doing the whole communication, I think you were supposed to tell them that the show starts at 1.
Yeah, I always tell people it starts at 1, but be here by 12:45. Like, because I know black people time.
Even though you're only going to be on, like, 30 minutes later.
Exactly.
Tell
be
them
here by, 12:45.
Yeah. Okay.
But unfortunately, you know, probably, you know, ran into fish or rice somewhere.
That rice issue.
So the two workers. Okay, so I wanted to ask you guys, being South Africans, candidly speaking, no one can see you. I haven't mentioned names. I just said the two woke girls.
You've been mentioning my name since we started the show.
But you just gave yourself up. People probably didn't know it was you, right? Now they know it's Palace.
Wait, so I can... Oh, but like,
and you're all over Twitter.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
And I see the comments that are jumping in, you know, these dudes, you know, trying to...
They
slide
like,
into the DM?
They're trying to do the whole hashtag we met on Twitter and bye. That's not going to work. No.
Are any of them the recipients of xenophobia? Are any of them foreigners?
No.
They're afraid.
It's only South African dudes that have been, hey, you know?
They're afraid when it's hard on these streets these days. But anyway, so what do you guys, candidly speaking, what have been your personal interactions, negative interactions with foreigners? Don't be afraid. You see, don't be throwing your hands around. I mean, guys, you know, we can't run away from the fact that the people have had bad experiences,
yeah,
with foreigners. And we just want, you know, we want to have the conversation out there. Let's hear both sides of the story.
Okay, I think I should start off going back to the taxi conversations.
Mm-hmm.
So we did a podcast about taxi conversations. And I think what happens in taxis is that if you cannot speak the language, which is Zulu most of the time,
yes,
taxi drivers ignore you like... there's no tomorrow.
Yeah.
You get treated very bad. I mean, you could be in the taxi and we've had African brothers come in and be like, okay, I'm going to this place. Do you know where it is?
Mm.
And literally they'd be treated like they are not human at all.
Yeah.
They'd be like, they'd just snub them. And then comments are made about them in the taxi.
Yeah, because they don't understand. They don't like.
Yes. And you're just like, oh my gosh, like,
wow,
what's going on? And South Africans just be like, they'll be talking in Zulu or their home language. And you just, because I'm South African, I can hear what's going on, and you're just like, but guys, this person's also human.
Right? You know what I mean?
You know? Like, and instead of saying, this is the place where you're getting off, they'll just be like, the car would stop, and then they'll be like, like that person who wants it didn't, like as if you know where you're supposed to get off. Yeah. They don't say, okay, you asked for this place here, it is, turn left. They're like, no, why haven't you gotten off? I'll drive off right now. And that's, I think that's the kind of, what I've seen on a daily, because I take public transport, taxi drivers,
You gotta invest in the Howtrain, man.
Honestly,
Howtrain, Howbus, 24/7. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
No. I'm not saying you. I mean, as a foreigner.
But like also we can't say foreigners now need to take the Howtrain just because they're scared of using public transport. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If you're in the country, let's take you for example, you are legal in this country.
Yeah.
You are here legally. So we can't say just because KF is here and he's a foreigner, then now he needs to run away from the fact that he's scared of people or what they're going to say to him in a public transport. You need to be free.
Yeah.
You are free and you are here legally. You sign papers, you have documents. So now we can't be treating you funny and we don't know the story. We don't know why you're here, number one.
Yes.
But where do you think it comes from?
I think apartheid, number one. I think that we have...
No.
Well, I'm just... For me, personally, I've seen it as... Because of apartheid and we've been so oppressed as black people that we... Also, when we see other black people flourishing, it makes us insecure and it makes us... And it's like, oh, well, you're flourishing in our land,
but
you're not from here initially and I'm still struggling. I can't make as much as you're making. I can't do what you're doing or I'm not as brave to pursue what you're pursuing. And a lot of people, it makes them insecure. So when you are insecure, you tend to like just lash out when people are trying to help or you tend to put the blame on other people.
Mm-hmm.
I think so apartheid played a big role in that. But I also think as black people we have these superstitions and our cultures and we're just not inviting, you know, we always close off people. For the longest of time there was this rivalry between Zulus and Xhosas, and you know
I think it's still there in the ANC.
Yeah. But wow. it's just like something that goes way back, and you're just like, you know, Zulu people would look down on Xhosa people, vice versa, and it's like a big thing in the black community that if a man marries a Xhosa woman or vice versa, it's like
I've been warned against Xhosa women though.
So it's culture and apartheid, I think. Yeah.
Do you think this was present, Palesa, before apartheid?
For me,
do you think there were tribal issues in South Africa before apartheid?
Maybe.
I'm talking about tribal, like the way it's tribal now. There've always been tribal issues.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but it wasn't because anyone looked down upon the other. It was maybe because we want to exploit your tribe. Maybe you guys have more cows and then we're coming to raid you or something of the nature.
Honestly, I don't do history.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't, like, I stand to be corrected. But with me, I disagree with you with the apartheid thing. Because with the apartheid thing, the South Africans who were victimized, whatever,
mm-hmm.
went to Zimbabwe, for example, and they hid there.
Yeah.
And then some went to Botswana, others went to other African countries.
We housed a lot of people.
To be safe there. So for me, I feel like it's the new generation who are doing all of this. Because if you take your Julius Malema, he understands the political history and what we went through.
And
he is welcoming to people from outside. With us, it's different. We don't want to accept them because, one, we are lazy. We want handouts. We want this. We want that. So if
This is prolific, Valisa.
If KF from Zimbabwe comes
Morocco.
If KF from Morocco comes to South Africa, he's doing better than me. I'm jealous. Because I feel like I am South African and I want to...
I should be there.
I deserve it. I let you...
Two work girls just took over the show.
So I just feel like for us, it happened with the generation after the apartheid generation. Because those people are slowly... getting out of parliament or getting out of the whole history thing.
Yeah.
We coming in, and with us coming in, we feel like we want a lot of things. Everything belongs to us. These people need to get out. And what we don't understand is that people from outside are very talented, they're hardworking,
and they go for what they want.
We're adding value to the country
exactly.
itself.
Exactly. Yeah. And with us, we just we want
and
handouts.
And I pay my taxes. I wish I couldn't.
We don't pay taxes. We run away from taxes. We don't work hard. My mom would be, for example, me. My mom was a nurse. I'll say, because my mom was a nurse, I deserve 1, 2, 3.
Mm.
Without realizing that people from outside, they had to struggle to get where they are. We need to just give them a chance to come to a better country and develop themselves. Mm. That's all it is. I don't get why we need to kill each other. Mm. We are Africans. Can we just live with each other? If a white person from France will come in the country, it would be like, because this person is white, so we accept this person.
But is that because of apartheid?
If it was because of apartheid, then Mandela wouldn't have went. No, Thabo Mbeki wouldn't have went to Zimbabwe and with his family because he took his wife. They went that side. Then they went to London. Then they lived there. But they started where? In Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
That's when all the young people who also were in the apartheid went to Zimbabwe and they were welcomed in Zimbabwe.
Okay. I've got to say shout out to Julius Malema because he's been very vocal in terms of the no to xenophobia movement.
You know,
he's been very vocal and he understands. I mean, just as a politician, as a public figure, he speaks a lot of good. And he is promoting pan-Africanism even more than the ANC and
exactly.
the DA.
Yes.
And they call him radical, which is kind of weird.
You know?
But Sipwe, I can see you. You're dying right now. You're burning.
I've been wanting to interject what Balesa said in the beginning. I agree with her to an extent. Mm. I feel like we are...
I can tell you're educated. That's how someone objects to you in an educated manner. I agree with you to an extent.
because... we as like the current generations, what I learned and what I know is not just from school, but it's also from my grandmother and how she feels about people from outside. The term kware kware has been here for centuries and years.
I use it all the time.
Yes, you see what I mean?
Yes.
It's not something where it's just come about in the last 50 years, it's been here for years. We as South Africans, and I think this is the problem, that we as South Africans have no problem trying to say, you know what, I need help, let me run off to Ghana, and people accept us in Ghana. But we as South Africans are not accepting of our Ghana brothers to come here because then we're like, but we still struggling and whatnot. And that's the problem. And I think it comes from literally apartheid when...
lazy.
Laziness. But when you were... I mean, if you were staying in a particular place and someone just one day came and took it and you had to stay in the townships, you don't trust anyone, you don't trust anything. And the next minute someone comes and says, no, I'm here for work. You're going to be like, what? What's wrong with you? Like, do it in your own... home place. Go do it there because
question from a Moroccan brother. Do you guys think that if all the foreigners were to leave South Africa, let's not say all of them, because that's impossible. Let's say 50% of the fully employed foreigners in South Africa were to leave. Do you think that would open up more opportunities for local?
No,
right? It would just open up career junction.
I have a question
to the UK and France.
I have a question
France.
For Simpiwe.
Okay.
With you saying it was because of apartheid, right?
And what we learned from our parents.
My question.
Okay,
you know,
okay. Carry on.
My question is, if you say this
Palestine,
was
you're
maybe,
a bully, but okay.
No.
You're a bully.
If
okay,
this,
let's go.
I got this, don't worry.
If this is because of apartheid, for example, like as you're saying, then... and then you're saying because these people are foreigners, they're from this country and they're taking like because we are not developed enough, so they can come into our country and settle down, then work and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we accepting to a white man who is from England, who comes to our country, who opens a business? But those people are the same people who took our land.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we are very accepting to them. This person is African and is working
and
is not taking our land. He just wants a piece of share from what they gave us in the past.
That question.
I want to add to that question. Let me just add that so you can ask all of them twice. Because we spoke about this with Nompumelelo before.
Yeah.
And we said, okay. So it's funny how the whole of African Twitter is out there talking about Donald Trump. He wants to deport all the illegal immigrants. He wants to deport all people from blah, blah, blah. And we're like, no, he can't do that. People need to make a living.
Yeah.
But that's exactly what y'all doing at home.
Yeah.
It's ironic.
It's wrong.
Very hypocritical. It's ridiculous.
It is. I love the question that Belissa asked me is, when a white man or a white person from Europe, from wherever, wants to come
that
in.
That goes
and,
back to apartheid.
Yes, it goes back to this whole thing where we have kind of been subjected to think that white people are superior to us and that they can have whatever they want. If they want the land, sharp, wherever you come from, you can get it. But you, as my fellow brother, who we've been in the struggle for 450 years, I'm sorry, you can't prosper because I'm not prospering. That's the mentality.
You're
that
going back to my point,
no,
right?
But I'm saying it all developed,
you know what,
from apartheid.
But as a foreigner, I do think that there's one thing that I would want to say is that, you know, when you move to a foreign country, at least abide by the laws of that country. First and foremost, right? Like, I mean, this is all to all my foreigners. I'm not taking away from the fact that you don't kill people, you don't burn people alive, you don't torture or beat up people, right?
Don't give us drugs.
But let's not give them a reason to in the first place, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, because you have to adapt to situations.
Yes.
You know, there's no point in saying, no, you can't do that. I mean, adapt. At least try and adapt, try and survive. Yeah. First of all, let's not give them a reason to. Let's not be criminals. Let's not. And secondly, you know what? I think the whole point as Africans, of us, the same way South Africans moved to Zimbabwe and moved to Namibia and Botswana during the liberation struggle, you know, fighting apartheid, they moved there for a certain period of time
and came back home
to gain something so that they could, you know, like build back home. Yes. And that's what most people need to do. We're in South Africa for a certain period of time.
And then go back
so that we gain what we need to gain, right? And then we go back and we establish our own countries. When you move out of your country and then you're in another country for like 15 years and then you're now trying to get a permanent residence and but you're not actively working towards going back home, I think that's a problem. Personally, I've been all over the world, and personally what I want to do is I'm trying to gain as much knowledge, as much connections, as many connections, as many pillars, so that one day I can move back home and give a shout out to Palisa, like, hey Palisa, I want to open a radio station back home.
Come through.
Come through, help us with this and that, and then, you know what I mean? And that's the whole point of traveling.
I hear you.
Which is the truth.
I agree with you right over there. Preach!
Two old girls, Palisa and Sipwe, man, y'all were amazing.
Even though
you took over the show, just to show solidarity, Timula, I forgot the name of this song, but he also, like, Timula played so much music for me. I mean, I think you're sleeping on stuff, Timula. He probably did this song like 5 years ago with a South African artist. I forgot her name. But we're going to close the show off. It's No Borders every Friday, 1 to 2 p.m. It's your boy KF, The Immigrants. Thank you to the two woke girls, Simpwe and Palisa. See y'all. No, log in next week. Round it out. No Borders. CliffCentral.com.